Azania Mosaka on 702.
12 minutes past one. As I was alluding to earlier on, I'm really excited to break down what NGOs, what organizations like FAMSA are doing across the country. And joining us for that conversation is Vilma Calvert, who sits with us now in our Sandton studios. Good afternoon, Vilma. Thank you for coming out on this public holiday.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me. And hi out to all the listeners out there.
And I know that it's you also, as people working in the field, you also get to see not just what gets reported, but firsthand the challenges that our communities and society face.
Absolutely. You know, within the communities, and because we are right in the community, yeah, and we work in the schools, as you say, we do see firsthand a lot of the ills and a lot of the issues.
Mm.
But I think, you know, we can talk about poverty and we can talk about all a lot of other issues, but parent support,
yeah,
is so vital. It's almost like that little three-legged pot,
mm,
you know, the child, the parent, and the school. So the school can do all they want, all they have to.
Yes.
And if there's no support from the parent, a lot of that just falls flat.
Yes. You know, often when we hear from spokespersons of the education department, be it provincial or national, when they comment about incidents that have happened within our schools, they, of late particularly, they'll acknowledge the things that they have done within the education system to try and manage the bad behavior that we see, these disappointing and behaviors that play themselves out, violent incidents and so on. But there's a limit to what they can do. It comes back to what we're doing in the home.
Absolutely. And I think if the more we work together, the, yeah, better the outcome will be.
Yes.
It's almost like saying, you know, that perhaps parental support,
mm,
is a bigger guarantee of success for that student than anything else.
Mm.
And I'm not talking about do your child's homework, you know, sit there and Google what they need to and make the project, but just be supportive, be there, show an interest in the child. And FAMSA comes in on another level,
mm-hmm,
in that a lot of what we do is preventative rather than reactive.
Right, right. And I think that's important. And it's a layer that we often don't get to look at. We get caught up in reacting once the incidents have happened. And we wonder about where are we falling short. So there is this tier that often gets neglected that needs a lot of our support. But overall, let's start by looking at family life centers and what it is that overall they do before we get into education for living, which in itself is such an interesting title for the program.
Yes, so our core function is family preservation.
Mm.
And that means everybody in the family and all the aspects that surround family. So it sounds very wide,
yeah,
and it is to a large degree.
Mm.
But again, each area focuses on very, very specific things within. So we look at the needs of the community,
mm,
and that's how we operate. So I would say that getting particularly holistic growth,
mm-hmm,
and starting as young as we possibly can so that we get a child to understand who they are,
yeah,
get to know themselves better, which makes for a better quality intrapersonal,
mm-hmm,
relationship,
mm-hmm,
which creates a better thought process, which will then create better actions, better results, and we then start what we call a victorious cycle rather than a vicious cycle.
Yes, I looked at how the Education for Living is mapped out, how the program is mapped out, and right at the top, number one, in this little light bulb infogram that has been put together, it says it starts with self-awareness. What's happening to me? Who am I and what do I believe is important in my life? And when you look at what could be at the heart of these questions, it is what's imparted to you in the form of values within the family.
Well, that's, I mean, the family is the first,
yes,
caregiver and, mm, the first teacher,
mm,
really. And so what we learn in the first 5 years of our lives is basically all we need to know.
Mm-hmm.
And the other stuff is optional extras.
Yeah.
So if we've got that core value system, and it gives us that strength, just like in physical training. If the core is strong, we can begin to work with other issues.
Yes.
But if that core value isn't there, if that child doesn't have any self-worth of or feeling of self-worth, then a lot of things can go horribly wrong.
Mm. And at a point, the program becomes co-created, right? But let's look at, because you start with them from grade 1 to grade 12, which
That's right.
I found to be really interesting, because so often we target our programs with children when they're older, you know, in those high school years or going into tertiary. So it's absolutely critical, and I think it's encouraging to see that you start with them from a very, very young age.
Yes.
And to start asking themselves to and about who am I, which is can be, it's a tough question even for adults to answer if you haven't done self-awareness work right through. But is it, how do children respond to that?
They do very, very well, because kids are curious
mm.
and they want to know more. And so, you know, through play, through demonstrations, various activities, we really get them involved and they begin to see, who am I? What are my strengths?
Yeah.
What can I do? But over and above that, where they begin to empathize with other children. Mm-hmm. And I think that is so important.
You think that's what's lacking and part of why we see the behavior we see?
Absolutely.
Lack of empathy.
A lack of empathy. But it starts with, because I don't value myself. So mm-hmm. how can I value anybody else?
Mm-hmm.
And I would like to perhaps use the analogy that, you know, if I give you a hand massage,
mm-hmm.
and your hands get soft. When you feel mine, you'll feel mine are soft too.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't do good for somebody else and not feel good about myself.
Yes.
So the more empathy I have, the easier it is for me to see you as a human being, and I will treat you with respect. I will treat you with kindness. I will treat you with dignity.
Mm-hmm.
And you're seeing that, you'll mirror that to me. So it's a give-give, a win-win situation.
Yes, and maybe sometimes in the home, these opportunities are not as many as we think they are, or as many as we would like for them to be, because we can't forget the single parent trend,
yes.
which is growing, which has been with us for a long time. We can't forget child-headed households, parents who are also just inundated with other priorities, needing to go to work and providing for the family.
And so this is why we're saying, you know, it's a whole family unit. Mm-hmm. It's not just one person. But if we can begin to for children to see that there is another way,
yes,
that, and we give them vision, then they can then begin to aspire to something new and something different.
Mm-hmm.
And then challenge parents then to say, you know, well, what's going on here? Why is this? What's this happening?
Yeah.
And also then begin to interact better with their children.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, we want to leave it in the hands of the teacher. And their core function is to teach.
Yes.
So, you know, helping, making the teacher a little more equipped, better equipped, so that they can deal with some of the issues, the social issues that kids are faced with.
Mm-hmm.
Because when we do go in with these programs, we get a lot of disclosures around bullying,
mm-hmm.
around sexual abuse, physical abuse, and a lot of stuff comes out. And we are able to deal with it, but we need for somebody to carry on.
Yes.
Once
yes.
we've moved out.
Yes.
And I think this is where the teachers need to be equipped
yes.
to deal with some of the issues.
And we'll look at how you bring in the educators and how you bring parents, because you have a parent program as
well.
Arm to education for living workshops. But there's something that you said that I think is really fundamental, that you get a lot of disclosures. That suggests trust. It suggests that they feel there's safety, psychological safety, that the children feel so that they can open up and disclose that which you end up hearing.
Well, I think also the other mitigating sort of factor is that we come in as an outside person.
Mm-hmm.
So that child is not faced with you every day. So I've told you something. So when are you going to disclose? You know, when are you going to let it out? So we come in and we do the work and we get the disclosures and we're able to point the kids or the teachers in the right direction where they can get further help.
Yes.
But then that child gets helped. Whereas perhaps teachers are stuck and then they may discuss, and you know, and then the child doesn't feel safe. So I can't just tell anybody.
Mm-hmm.
And I think sometimes it's a little easier to tell a stranger.
Yes, yes. That's so interesting that even the what the caregivers or the adults in a child's life might not be the place they go to for that reassurance, for those disclosures, that it takes a stranger coming in for them to feel they can unburden themselves.
Yeah, like I say, once we go through the program and we've built a little bit of rapport, and they see, you know, that
they
feel different. And I sometimes think that we forget what people say and do to us and for us, but we remember how it makes us feel.
Maya Angelou said that actually.
That's key.
Yes, absolutely. So, how you do this through the education system? And I mentioned some of the areas in which you work, but what has been the willingness of schools to have the program?
Now, here's where the friction actually starts.
Yeah.
Because the department is expecting, I mean, it's contact time, you know. So we've got to really, really battle to get principals to buy in and see the worth of the program because they've got to stick to contact time. But because kids don't go to schools in the area where they live, we can't do the programs after school. But if the Department of Education can see, we come in, we spend maybe 2 hours, but it's quality 2 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And the kid then moves away from those 2 hours with a sense of wonderment or self-worth or whatever it is that they take away from the program. And then they're better able to work for the rest of the day, the rest of the month, the year, the term.
Yes.
You know, so it shouldn't be seen as we're coming in to disrupt.
Mm.
We're coming in to assist. And we need the partnership of the department to assist us to do that. Our last financial year, we saw over 40,000 kids.
Mm-hmm.
And even if we touch half of them, and half of them make a difference in their lives, I think it's worth it.
So it's about the leadership of the school, understanding that overall, that little ecosystem that is the school benefits by having this a program such as this included.
Absolutely.
So they're able to remain a little bit more focused on their education, their behavior in the classroom, their interaction with teachers, even with each other. What have schools that you have had a presence in, what have they come back to say? Have they seen a difference in the way the students are?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I mean, we get, you know, told, please don't, you know, don't stop there. Come back in, move or start with the lower grades and move them up as we go along.
Yes.
And then please get in touch with the high school so that the kid is not stranded. Now we've had this help throughout the primary school years, you know, the capacity.
Yeah.
We need to have the capacity and we need the buy-in from the department.
So how do you persuade the leadership, SGBs and principals?
I think if we often invite, because we need to invite parents as well.
Yeah.
So the parents are the starting point and we get them to understand what it is, how it's going to help them and their kids.
Mm-hmm.
And then they can begin to motivate. And this is often what happens.
Right.
That the parents then motivate and say, we need these programs, we need. And the teachers also then see that they do need these programs to assist them as well as the kids and the parents.
Mm. What does the parents' workshop entail?
A lot of it is around communication, how we talk to our kids. Words are so powerful. So getting them to understand also the developmental tasks of the age, different age groups, what are kids supposed to be doing, what are their struggles, what are their difficulties, and how can you cope? So that's sort of what the parenting program would entail.
Mm. And one would think that, I'm just thinking about how ill-equipped parents equally are in raising children and in the things that we're going to confront along the way.
Yeah, it's the one thing we don't have to write any exams for.
No, we don't. And yet we carry it, the responsibility.
It's a huge responsibility.
Yeah.
And I think we've also lost that extended family where, you know, parents would assist or grandparents would assist. A lot of that isn't happening. So you're all on your own, and more so when you're a single parent.
Mm-hmm.
So having help, finding where you can get the help, why not accept that help?
Yes. Do you get disclosures from parents as well?
We get a lot of parents even come in and say, I'm struggling with my child. I don't know quite what to do. So there is a counseling component to what we do as well.
Yes.
And that can happen, you know, once we realize what the problem is and we can assist where we can.
Mm. One thing you mentioned earlier on is, and we'll look at Westbury in a short while, but I want to really commend the fact that the programs are almost customized for that situation, for that community, because it's a one size fits all. The problems you see in Soweto are not going to be the same as in Coronationville, for instance.
Agreed. So, yeah, it's almost customized. So there is a guideline, a basic guideline.
Yeah.
And then it's tweaked and customized for that particular school. Sometimes even from school to school, it would differ.
Mm-hmm.
Because like I say, it's not, although we're saying it's in the Westbury area, it doesn't mean all the kids come from Westbury.
Right.
So we would then have to look at what are the specific needs and then work around that.
Yeah. And I think that further reinforces that I matter.
Absolutely.
Who I am, what I worry about, what challenges me in my everyday life matters.
It matters because it's pointless me coming in and talking about something that they have absolutely no interest in.
Mm-hmm.
Then it's wasting everybody's time.
Yes.
So it is important that we understand what are the specific needs. Sometimes what are the expectations of the kids and work around that.
Mm. So from grade one, how do you break it down from grade 1 to 12 about what are the subjects or what are the areas to attend to?
So personal safety is a big issue, particularly for the little ones.
Mm.
So understanding, like, you know, who do I call if I'm in need? So they need to have, for example, somebody in the school that I can speak to, somebody in my immediate family that I can speak to, somebody outside of the family I can speak to.
Mm-hmm.
Because sometimes it's the person in the family that's causing the abuse, whether it be physical or whatever. So it's pointless saying, have your mom's number when mom's the one who's causing the problem.
Yes.
So issues are like that.
Yeah.
Just general playing.
Mm-hmm.
Around, you know, what's personal space,
mm-hmm.
Things like not taking stuff that doesn't belong. So just inculcating that idea of self-worth.
Self-respect,
yeah. And then respecting others in exactly the same way.
And we'll break it down a little bit more to see how it changes. So that foundation's been laid for grade 1 to 4. And then there's another foundation or another focus area in grade 5 and then grade 6 to 7 and then 8 to 10 and, of course, 10 to 12 or 11 to 12. So we'll continue our conversation with Vilma Calvert. And she's a seasoned counselor from the Family South Africa, FAMSA. FAMSA's Westbury office, and we'll take your questions and your comments 011-883-0702-31702 for your SMSs, your WhatsApps, and your voice notes on 072-702-1702.
Azania Mosaka on 702.
25 minutes to 2 o'clock, and we're taking your calls, your comments as we reflect on an initiative that seeks to support especially disadvantaged communities, support families and support learners. And it involves teachers through the education system, parents as well as children. And it's called Education for Living. And with us this afternoon, it's Vilma Calvert, who is one of their seasoned counselors, and she's based at their Westbury office. Vilma, put your headphones on. We've got Manoke calling from Kyalami with a comment. Good afternoon, Manoke.
Good afternoon, Vilma. How are you?
Well, welcome.
And to your guest as well.
Mm. Thank you.
Look, I just want to make a quick comment. You know, look, I think they're doing a good job, and I really want to applaud them for that. I just see different challenges. Number one, look, they are dealing with children. Talking about the bullying and all these unruly behaviors in schools. Remember, these disadvantaged children do not see their parents. I mean, they leave home, their parents leave home early in the morning, they come home late at night, meaning they cannot in any way give guidance to their children. She talked about, look, giving guidance to children from as early as age 5 and so on and so on, mm-hmm. which makes perfect sense. But now, when you're a parent not seeing your child, you can't instill any values in that child. It actually leaves the responsibility to the teachers. It needs the teachers to really be equipped, because they become automatically the parents of these children. And if the teachers are not equipped, there's no way that these children can actually be, you know, responsible mm-hmm. children that understand the values of society. Now, some of them don't even have parents, I mean, to make it worse. Now, we need people that will... I know it's a difficult thing that one can actually even think about.
Yeah. You
know? Look, we need people that can actually go out to these households, with these children that are being dealt with in these particular schools. They need to go to their homes. We need people that can actually visit their homes and see, more like carrying these children away for 2-3 hours a day after school to actually give them some guidance. Just, you know, as an extension of what, you know, the counselors are doing in the schools. That's what I think really could also be.
You know, I think it sounds like a great idea, but sometimes when you're working on the ground, Manoka, these things are easier said than done. And you will find some people having resistance in, you know, that might baffle you. So it's important that we also understand that perspective, because often we superimpose our own perceptions and our own views without really necessarily attending to the ego involved, what that suggests to that person. Are we saying they're not doing a good job? You know, there are all these other human factors that come into play that we might see as irrational. But as human beings, we are irrational, and we will reject a notion such as that. Vilma, what do you think of the suggestion that Manoka has made? I mean, is it that easy?
It's not that easy. However, even the limited amount of time that parents spend with their kids, kids learn by example.
Right.
So even if you are only spending
that
hour or 15, mm-hmm. 20 minutes, mm-hmm. how you interact with that child makes a difference. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you're thinking about the child-headed households, parents, again, the kids might not even tell the teacher that this is what's happening,
yeah.
for fear of being removed and sent, you know, the family being split apart and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So it's not an easy task to say, you know, let's just identify and then go in there and do whatever. And rightly, some parents might really, really take serious offense.
Yeah.
And, you know, from doing that.
Yes. But Manoka, thank you very much for your call.
Thank you, Azania. Thank you so much.
Thank you for your contribution. I do know, you know, my mother, and maybe let me bring it to the actual example that I'm thinking of. Through their church, they go out and they do a lot of this, like, presence at schools, and they try and get more involved within different schools. But there's a lot of backlash that is experienced from parents. You know, parents do not necessarily take kindly to what they hear. And because much of this blame is sent back to the home and what is happening in the home, so they often don't respond as you think they would. They come back quite violently. They reject the notion that they are failing their children.
Absolutely. Because, I mean, if somebody's telling you that you're doing something wrong, yeah. you're going to go onto the defensive.
You take a defensive position, yeah.
And then it's resistant, and then you can't work with that family.
Mm-hmm.
But if you come alongside and say, you know, you come and talk to me. What is your problem? How can we help you? Mm-hmm. That makes it so much easier.
Mm-hmm.
So
almost to be invited in.
Invited in.
Yes.
And get them to buy in. And then you begin to work with that family. But it's difficult to also, because, like you're saying, you know, particularly the single parent mom, mm-hmm. Was going out to work, and that's what she probably just, you know, that's all she can do,
yeah.
is to make sure that there's enough money so that she can feed and keep her kids together.
Mm-hmm.
But again, you know, there are other alternatives. There's so many other role models.
Yes.
There are so many other people who would love to step in, but we're scared of being vulnerable.
Mm.
And so we don't say, I need help.
Mm.
We battle out on our own, and the help is there.
You're so right. And it speaks to the load that we've also placed on educators. Listening to Manoke's speeches, speak as he says that automatically the teachers become that child's parent at school. And it's not necessarily what teachers have signed up for. A few years ago, there was a book written about the police as well, that the police, to some degree, are expected to carry out social work, which isn't necessarily what they are trained to do. They come into a domestic violence situation. They come into all sorts of situations where they have to play this mediator, this person who's going to correct and bring about justice. And meanwhile, they're not necessarily equipped.
And in the same situation, teachers find themselves.
Yeah.
Because you have to deal with all the social ills.
Mm-hmm.
You have to deal with
the child not having stationery, really, not having uniform, not having a meal.
All of that.
Yeah.
And so where do you start?
Mm-hmm.
And equipping teachers, I think, with even something like a 20-hour basic counseling skills course will go a long way to helping them to deal with some of the situations.
Right.
But there are things that are just beyond them. And so, you know, maybe in the ideal world, having two social workers at a school.
Yes.
Organizing parents who are not working and giving them a stipend so that they become like foster parents to groups of kids.
To sit with them, to do their homework.
To help
read
them.
With them.
Absolutely. So it's not just the teacher in the class. And how do you deal with 40, 50 kids all at the same time, each one on a different level?
Right.
It's tough.
Yes. I remember in the UK, there a few years ago, there was a story, whether it was on BBC or Sky, whichever, but there was a story about how the elderly were being brought in to the reading lesson. And they would be paired with the child, and they would read to the child would read to them. But there was this extended value that the elderly had something to do, and then that the child was getting a social parent or social grandfather, grandmother.
Yeah, I think, you know, we bandy the word Ubuntu around, and it takes a village to grow a child, but we don't believe that anymore, mm-hmm. really,
mm-hmm.
you know, in its essence. And that is such a fantastic thing. That if your child is my child, wherever I see that child, and in this process with the education for living, this is what we're trying to engender within the child,
mm-hmm.
that they would actually see themselves as worthy, make a connection with somebody else, and keep that, as I said, this victorious cycle going so that each one begins to feel valued.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds so simplistic and so simple, but I think sometimes the simple things are the things that work.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So let's come back to the older grades. So what happens with the children, say, in grade 5 to the end of primary school to grade 7?
Right. So we start looking at choices and making good choices. So that's in all different aspects of their lives. So it's friends that they choose to be with, whether they're going to be choosing to take drugs or not. Because I think we, as adults, we kind of say, you know, say no to. And that's the destination.
Yeah.
We don't see the process. So we need to start them where it's not a life or death matter, where they can actually make a decision.
Mm-hmm.
So if I don't want to eat the peas, you know, I can taste it and see, now I really don't like it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a life or death matter, but I'm learning the process that I can listen to my voice,
mm-hmm.
that I do have a voice. And so I can make a choice.
But where's the place for authority there? Because that's part of the criticism with this, with what we see, that there isn't a respect for authority.
I sometimes think that there isn't a respect. But again, if I'm allowing you and I say these are the boundaries, so I'm not saying you're not, you know, everything that you don't want to eat, you're not going to, kind of thing. But I'm saying try this. If you don't like it, you can give me your reasons why. So that I treat your voice as valued.
Mm-hmm.
So that when I'm making other choices,
mm-hmm.
I know that I have the capability. Rather than you will do exactly as I tell you to do.
Yes.
So when do I learn to use my voice? When do I learn to make the choices?
Yes.
So in a guided way, in a structured way, we can begin to teach children mm-hmm. how to make good choices.
Mm. And then at the high school level, I see that they get involved in planning the content.
Yes. So there would be, because relationships and sex is always going to be a key component of what they want to talk about.
Right.
So that, and very often, like I say, we do allow them to give their input as well. So what is important to you? And we find that although we're asking them to give that,
mm-hmm.
it's very much what we need to be telling them anyway.
Right.
So it's around relationships. What is a healthy relationship? How do I know if I'm in a relationship with a young man or a young woman? How do I know that this is a good relationship?
Mm-hmm.
Because sometimes our feelings get in the way and we assume that it is a good relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And it may not be. So identify is around that. And it's not just around our organs,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot more than that.
Mm-hmm.
It's things like consent. It's things like
yes.
what's the difference between a mate and a date, and what am I looking for,
mm-hmm.
and what am I prepared to give in the relationship? How do I set boundaries? Mm-hmm. When do I set boundaries? Career choices. So there's a lot of stuff that they do want to talk about, and thank goodness that it's almost in alignment with what we need to be telling them anyway.
Yes. Well, let's take a break, and when we come back, we'll zone in on Westbury, just to give you a sense of how this the requirements for a certain school for specific area are responded to through Education for Living.
No, live, transform. This is 702. This is 702. For the curious.
It's 10 minutes to 2 o'clock, and we're about to wrap up our first hour of the show. We've been in conversation with Wilma Calvert, who is a senior counselor within the FAMHSA organization. And she is one of the counselors who works within a program called Education for Living. And she's based at the Westbury office. And we're looking at what this particular organization is doing within communities to support children as well as families and educators, so that we can start to see a different outcome in how our children behave and how they carry themselves and within the schooling system and towards various levels of authority. Wilma, let's understand what is happening in Westbury. We know for some time now that gangsterism is one of those problems that is rife in the area. And when you understand or you look into what draws people into gangsterism, it's often about belonging.
It is about belonging. And the role models are so few.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a very, very huge unemployment rate.
Yes.
Drug abuse, alcohol abuse, substance abuse is high.
Mm.
And so often kids get lost, particularly at primary school. There is a genuine concern and care, maybe a little more than at high school level. And that's where the dropout rate happens. So your grade 9 pupil, they might get to grade 8 and then they're dropping out in grade 9.
Wow.
And so trying to catch them at the grade 8 level and finding ways of helping them. Because the other aspect that we're seeing is a lot of anxiety and depression amongst young people, and a fairly high suicide rate.
Why?
Because they have no vision. They don't see how they can get out of the situation.
Mm.
And unfortunately, the good news is downplayed. So there are people who are becoming nurses, doctors, lawyers, all of that good stuff.
Mm.
But there's so few of those that are making it out that they don't see. They can't emulate. Here's somebody that I can.
Mm.
So trying to get also those people to give back into the community is another area that we kind of looking at. So catching them in the grade 8 is key, really, really key for us. So looking at making better choices,
yes,
is really, really important. So even if they have done it in grade 7, but we try and, you know, sort of solidify that and make that really, really strong,
mm.
so that they do make better choices. And again, also being a lot more self-aware around that age, because peer pressure is huge.
Yes.
And cyberbullying is another factor.
Mm-hmm.
So we deal a little earlier in our areas with those issues.
Mm. So the message around starting these conversations from a young age becomes even more important. Because when you've crafted a sense of self-awareness, when there's a vision, a sense of a vision for your life, then you're less likely maybe to be susceptible. We have to acknowledge there are other factors, of course, chemical imbalances and sorts of other things. But if we are to be a little bit narrow in it, that maybe you're less susceptible
to making
to succumb, yes.
To making those decisions, or you know, what's the point, kind of, you know. So inspiration is also a part of that, you know, just trying to inspire them,
yes,
and giving them a vision, so that there is something that they can look forward to.
So I think that's quite fascinating, even as you say that people need to come back to their communities to share, to show, and to share their journey, how they overcame, how they achieved something, but to demonstrate to those that might have lost hope that it is possible.
It is possible.
It is possible.
Absolutely.
So we can't just cry about the headlines. We have to do our part and go back and give back. I think that's part of the message there. What is the kind of support that you have for your facilitators? Because I imagine sitting across from you, that the things that you hear, the situations you're confronted with, they cannot be easy.
They aren't easy, and we battle quite a bit. So, I mean, even for example, now starting tomorrow, there's a holiday program for youngsters, because the feeding scheme is the only place where they're going to eat. So we've developed a holiday program to keep them off the streets, number one, and to make sure that they're getting something to eat.
Good.
And it starts off with a trickle, and by the end of the week, we sit with about 500 kids.
Mm.
So, but again, we see that it's making a difference. So there isn't a lot of support. So we've got to go out there looking for the support, you know, asking people for donations, or coming in just to be a part. And we try and get the parents there as well.
Yeah.
So that they can see what we're doing, how we are helping. And from the one that we ran in the River Lee area, which is part of our jurisdiction, we got the parents who weren't working to start a sewing club. So, you know, they're always spin-offs from that when they can see the value and the worth of what we're doing. So we do get dribs and drabs of donations, but we go out there, and the more they see that it's working, the more that grows.
Wow. Gosh, I think there's so much need, and there's a great opportunity, of course, for us to play a part, especially with programs like these that are on the ground. Thank you so much, Vilma. Thank you for sharing the insights of what you do through Education for Living. That was a helpful snapshot of what can be done, what is happening, and what we need to do, how we can play a part.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you. That was Vilma Calvert. So if you want the details for FAMSA, now they provide all sorts of other services. It's not just restricted to Education for Living. It is, as Vilma said, about family preservation, because that is the starting point to a healthier society. So go to familylife.co.za, and that's where you'll be able to get more information on FAMSA and the services that they provide, whether it is social work, psychological assistance. I know that, for instance, seeing a psychologist can cost a hell of a lot for many people. But what they aim to do is provide psychological support, psychologists at an affordable amount. And they provide other opportunities for therapeutic and skills training for destitute mothers, support for families, and of course, support for children through schools. So if there are schools in your area that you think could benefit from this, why not suggest it? Why not suggest it to other parents, to the leadership at that school, and see how it can begin to transform the school and, of course, the broader community?